This is Cave Scott Allen of otico.com.
This is Kevin Dente.
This is John Galloway.
This is Scott Kuhn from lazycoder.com.
If you've been listening to the show for a while, you'll know we're big fans of RunScope. In fact, you can listen to us on episode 168, talk to John about the initial launch of the RunScope service. We're happy to announce that this episode of Herding Code is brought to you by RunScope Traffic Inspector. It's like Fiddler or Postman, but it's up in the cloud, so that allows you to get a live stream of the API requests that your applications are making. And the cool thing is that it's set up as an HTTP endpoint, so that means you can just toggle the HTTP endpoint in your application without making any code changes, and that works with any language or any framework. You can sign up for free at runscope.com/herdingcode and get a free standard account. That's a $29 a month value. RunScope, everything is going to be 200 okay. Hello, we are at Techorama, Belgium. It is May 28, 2014, and I have grabbed Mark Rendell right after finishing his keynote today. And well, first of all, your keynote was on kind of the history of computing.
Yeah, history of programming from some guy in 60 AD in Greece with string and pulleys. But no, basically going through from the 40s to now.
What was your favorite kind of inspiration in putting that together?
It was a combination of the kind of shoelaces and spit attitude of the 40s and people just throwing things together out of telephone relays. That's just what they did with what they had is amazing.
Yeah.
And I think the 60s and 70s, when like most of the stuff was invented, like in the talk, I say 1972, was small talk and C, and all these different things happened in 1972, which is the year before I was born. Mm-hmm. That's just interesting.
One thing I thought was funny, it was a very funny talk, but one thing that stuck out at me, like the jokes about the serious programming language were just as funny as the jokes on these other kind of fake programming languages, right?
Yeah.
And some of them you're like, seriously, this is someone's idea of a good programming language.
Yes. So you got kind of, on the one hand, you got Intercal and, Brainf and Malbolge.
Right.
Which know that they're terrible. And then on the other hand, you've got, I'm not going to name these languages, but you've got a lot of languages that were created over the years. I think I can probably say COBOL without offending too many people.
And was it IBM's COBOL that was especially bad?
Yeah, IBM, the COBOL standard, came out of the Codasil committee with Grace Hopper leading it, and it was incredibly verbose. But of course, IBM being IBM looked at it and went, that's not verbose enough. There's information missing.
Right.
And so the COBOL Hello World is like 10 lines, and IBM COBOL Hello World is 40 lines, which is just, it's just so IBM.
Beautiful.
It's great.
Okay, so we've talked about the past. Let's, you're very future focused. You're working on all kinds of new and exciting things. So one thing is you've just started up a business, Zoodio.
Yeah, that's been running for just over a year now. And it's been running in a kind of, it's been online. We've had billing set up, but we just have not been able to invest the time and effort in pushing it and marketing it.
Mm-hmm.
That's changing now. We're getting some customers. So I'm getting more time to spend on it. So we're launching some new features. We've got an enterprise model coming up soon.
Well, first of all, what does Zoodio do?
It came about because I was stuck in a client office and I needed to do something with Azure storage. Mm-hmm. I needed to find out what had gone wrong with the Met Office's process that kind of had a queue that pulled things off blobs and imported them into a SQL database and it had stalled. And my laptop was on the customer's network and had restricted access and things, so I couldn't use that.
Right.
I had my iPad with me and my kind of 3G connection, but there isn't anything on the iPad. So I originally thought, I'll write an iPad app for Azure storage.
Mm-hmm.
And then when I started doing that, I thought, I don't like Objective-C.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought, why not do a web app? Because it's one of those things.
Open it up, right?
But, you know, the advantage of a native app is it works offline. But mm-hmm. if you're working with something that is inherently online, then, you know.
Right.
So it's a web-based tool for managing Azure storage. We're hoping everyone will use it, but it's particularly good for those kind of Node and PHP and Java guys who don't necessarily have a Windows platform.
Right.
Who can't run the WPF applications that have previously existed. So yeah, it's HTML5, AngularJS, TypeScript, all that good stuff.
Okay. So, and this is more than just kind of like, I was originally thinking this was a simple little table grid kind of thing, but you've got a lot of
more advanced features in there, right?
Yeah.
I mean, you're restricting access and...
So we've got the enterprise model, which is just launching, lets you control your user list through Windows Azure Active Directory, which, of course, you can synchronize with your on-premise Active Directory if you want to. And then you can say, these people in this group have got read access to this storage account, and this person can create new storage accounts and whatever else is going on without needing to go to every Tom, Dick, and Harry and hand them your secondary shared key to your Azure storage account. And also we've got a lot of auditing and logging going in there. So if someone downloads an entire table, we can tell you who it was, which for, you know, enterprises and anyone who cares about the security of their data is a key feature.
That's pretty important,
so yeah.
And you're specifically focused on storage, or is that branching out?
At the moment, so we're just about to launch the enterprise beta here at the end of May. Throughout June, I will be working very hard on some analytics code to show you your storage analytics, how much you use today, how much of that was blob and table and so forth. Once those two things are out of the door, once the analytics is done, we'll be putting the enterprise stuff onto the market, trying to sell that. And then the plan is SQL databases.
Wow.
Because at the moment, you've got, obviously, you've got Azure SQL database. You've also got the SQL Server VMs. You've got ClearDB running MySQL. You've got Oracle now. You can spin up an Oracle VM either on Windows or Linux. And, you know, if you want to, you can spin up a Linux box and put PostgreSQL or, you know, something else awesome on it. And we want to help people manage that. And actually, you know, it starts off, simplest thing that could possibly work is we'll give you a window where you can type a SQL statement. We'll run it for you and return you a grid of the results. But then we'll start to add in things like, here's a list of your tables, here's a list of your views.
Right. Kind of like PHP admin on steroids.
Like PHP admin, but for any database in any data center. Yeah. And we're running right next to your code, so you don't have to deploy a machine or a website just to run whatever it might be.
Right.
My kind of... My stretch goal, if this was on Kickstarter, is to be able to say, copy this Oracle database from this Oracle server that I've got registered here and paste it into this Azure SQL database server. And it just takes care of all the translation between types and moves all the data across for you. And then you get an email or an SMS going, it's done.
Wow.
And just be able to, you know, completely abstract away that whole vendor lock-in thing.
Yeah.
That, like I say, stretch goal.
Yeah. So you mentioned that this is built using AngularJS and TypeScript.
Yes.
And when we talked, I think at MVP Summit, like last year, you were telling me how much you love AngularJS and TypeScript. And I've been thinking, we got to talk about
this. I looked at Knockout. I looked at Kendo. I looked at Ember, and it is just that learning curve. Ember's kind of got a very flat learning curve, and then you hit a wall where you need to learn a lot of stuff altogether. Whereas Angular, I found you can get something running, and it's working, and then a little bit later you found out there's a better way of doing something than you did, but you can just go back and go, right, well, I'll get rid of that factory and replace that with a service or whatever. But Angular combined with TypeScript and using TypeScript classes for Angular controllers and services and so forth, with the declarative data binding. To me, it feels like the data binding framework that Microsoft have been trying to write since VB3.
Huh.
You know, where you kind of go, this field is bound to this object here, but without any of the iNotify property changed and binding
all
data source and all the mad stuff that goes on in kind of Windows forms or WPF.
Now, why TypeScript as opposed to just writing the JavaScript? What does it give you that much more? Is it about safety? Like,
it's about sanity checks. It's about, so the vast majority of the code is client side. The server side is essentially just proxying calls to Azure storage. So I've got about somewhere between 8,000 and 10,000 lines of what would be JavaScript.
Right.
And so I always call, you know, people go, oh, you don't need compilers if you've got tests, but I always call the compile step test zero.
Yeah.
And it just catches so much stuff that I wouldn't catch.
What's an example of something that it would catch?
So for example, I have services, and I pass these services around all over the place. One of the services I have is an error service. So when an HTTP error comes back from an AJAX call, I report that. That gets used all over the place, and that takes the status and the data and the headers function. And if I pass those in the wrong order or something, then it goes insane.
Yeah.
And if you've just written dynamic code and you haven't covered that unhappy path in your, your Jasmine tests, then you gaily put that into production and off it goes. And I'm not saying, you know, with TypeScript, I never put anything broken into production, because I do.
Right.
But I also catch a lot of things up front. And the IntelliSense doesn't hurt.
Yeah.
Angular's a big framework. It's got a lot of stuff in there.
And you're it's definitely typed?
Use the Angular definitions from Definitely Typed, which I also maintain a Bower package for. Being me, it's just for the ones I need.
Okay.
So I've got like a DT Angular and a DT jQuery, which I maintain on Bower.
Yeah.
So yeah, and you can just drag those in, and then you've got kind of ng.iscope as a type, and you type dot, and it goes $watch and $reply, and all these different things are on there.
Great.
It just makes it so much easier.
Okay. So let me see. Is there more we want to talk about with Angular or TypeScript? Yeah, that pretty much seems to cover it, huh?
I think it covers it. The one thing that's kind of got me excited, really excited about Angular, the nice thing about it is, you know, you choose something to build a project, and then you get to the end and you kind of go, I want to go back and do it again with something else.
Right.
Whereas actually I haven't done that. I'm still really happy with the choice. I'm happy with my choice of Angular, and I'm happy with the fact that I did it in TypeScript. So I'm not going to...
Yeah.
I took a brief look at Angular Dart. But, yeah, I don't understand what it's doing in the JavaScript it generates. It scares me.
Okay.
But Rob Eisenberg announced that he was collaborating with the Angular team on Angular 2.0. Some of the stuff that's in there is looking really, really good. A lot of ECMAScript 6 focus, Google making it work with Tracer. But I know the TypeScript team tracking what's going on there as well.
Yeah.
Because obviously TypeScript classes and modules and so forth are ECMAScript 6. So, yeah, I think... Angular 2.0 is quite a way off. We're going to get like a 1.4 and a 1.6. Mm-hmm. But it's very interesting to see what's coming down the line there.
Great.
Very performance stuff and so forth. So, yeah.
Okay. Can we hop over to Simple Web and Simple Data?
Yes.
So, I think when I last talked to you, it might have been about Simple Web. I forget.
I think we did talk about Simple Web briefly.
Yeah.
So, Simple Web, as I've said, in various contexts, I stamped around the place saying, I made Simple Web because they broke Web API, which I then had to explain to the Web API team at MVP Summit.
What's the two-sentence explanation of how they broke Web API?
Attribute-based routing and dependency injection.
Okay. So I now was both using, of those are there.
So I'm looking at the vNext stuff and the Web API things they've got in there. Essentially, everything that I... wanted that caused me to go off and build Simple Web has either found its way into MVC vNext, and there is no kind of Web API MVC distinction. There's just the two things. The other thing that's very cool is there is a controller-based class, but it's a convenience.
Yeah.
You don't have to use it, and I'm a big fan of that because that means I can use my own base class that does custom things and so forth.
And you're not a fan of creating your custom base that inherits from a controller base.
Because that's too many levels, and you end up with having a kind of, you've got controller and, of course, API controller, you inherit an authenticated controller from those, and then you inherit an admin controller from those.
Right.
And so, yeah, you end up with...
Pretty soon you're writing Java, right?
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. And you've got virtual method dispatches that are being handled in the third circle of hell. So, yeah. But the vNext stuff, they've gone right back to simple basic routes. There's lots of stuff in there that Simple Web did, and they're doing it as well, which is great. And there's the few things that they haven't done yet. I've had a poke around in the code, and I can implement them as extensions or alternative providers for MVC.
Okay.
So rather than saying, just throw the whole thing out, throw the baby out with the bathwater and use my framework from scratch, I can say, well, if you don't like that routing, or if you want my... So one of the things Simple Web does is it hooks into the JSON serializer and automatically adds the links collection for hypermedia APIs.
Right,
so with RHELs and all this sort of thing. And there's a perfect place to hook that into the JSON serialization and XML serialization pipeline in the new MVC.
Yeah.
So it seems silly to kind of sit on my little castle going, no, I'm not playing nicely with anybody else, where I can just contribute into a much wider ecosystem and help a lot more people.
Okay.
So Simple Web, tragically, will never hit 1.0.
You know, most open source things never
hit 1.0. Don't, do they? If they hit 1.0, then the hipsters stop using them.
Yeah.
I mean, grunt's out of fashion. That's only on 0.4. I haven't switched over to Gulp yet, which is weird for me. Yeah, Simple Web, I think, when I'm drunk, I'll probably claim that, you know, the core team learned from me.
Ah.
Oh, yes, definitely. That's the thing. I just, because this is audio, I was making a face that made it obvious. I didn't mean that. I'm not that egotistical.
We can blame it on the cold medicine.
Yes, exactly. Yeah.
But now, so there's simple web.
So simple web, and then there's simple data. And simple data kind of languished. It's stuck on 0.19, I think, which is actually a documentation issue.
Okay.
It's been pretty stable.
And simple data is simple data access layer, right?
Yeah. It's dynamic. It's inspired by things like Ruby's active record.
Mm-hmm.
It's not, people kind of lump it in with the micro ORMs like Dapper, which are designed to do something very narrow and do it very, very fast.
Right.
Whereas simple data is slightly more ambitious in scope. Performance is not quite such a consideration. The thing that people like about simple data is they can write the same code, literally exactly the same code, and they can run their tests against a SQLite in-memory database, and then their production code against Oracle or SQL Server or, you know, any of the databases that are supported, which actually includes things like Infomix.
Wow.
If you can remember that one.
Yeah.
So it's a data access abstraction more than it is an ORM.
Okay, so if you've got somebody listening and they're like, I just use any framework, why should I care? Is it more that it's plugging into different databases or the simplicity?
It's that it's plugging into different databases, but also for things like the simpler frameworks like Nancy Web Framework or for Script.cs, you tend to be working in a lightweight environment. You maybe don't have the IntelliSense anyway.
Right.
And without having to generate any code, without having to create any model classes and put attributes on properties and all this sort of thing, you can just say database dot open named connection my database dot users dot all. And then for each over that and just output it in Razor or whatever view engine you're using or bind it to a table in, WPF. It works it all out at runtime. So yeah.
So that's kind of where you're focusing more on.
So I'm going back to that because we're doing the SQL stuff in, Zoodio. So,
yeah.
We're adding SQL support back in there. So that involves simple data too, effectively. So the big focus is there is more metadata working a bit on the performance, and async support. If your listeners have a reaction to this, it would be very helpful for me to know what that is. I am thinking about making simple data 2 async only because there are some compromises in simple data 0.
Right.
Where if you're doing a single get operation, it's limited on how much it can do on top of that. If I say it's all async and I'm only going to execute something against your database when you await it or call, you know, like task.continue with or whatever it might be, then I can isolate the point at which you want to actually run the code. So
right.
It makes it much easier. And it's IO. You know, if you talk to a node guy, it's talking to an external data source. It's hitting network. It's hitting disk.
It should be
asynchronous.
Yeah.
So there'll be extension methods on there saying run synchronously, which will just give you the thing back and it won't create new threads or whatever else.
Yeah. Well, as a first listener, I'm a fan.
Yeah. So yeah, that's the, it's not just adding async support. It's actually staking a stick in the ground and going async only.
Yeah.
Because it does cool things.
Cool.
So yeah, that's where we are.
All right. So, you just finished a keynote. You also have a terrible cold and I promised I would take you 10 minutes.
Yes.
It's been 20.
That's me talking too much.
So, you're free to go. And do you want to say anything kind of as we're wrapping up? Is there anything we missed talking about?
No, ASP.NET VNext is awesome. We're working on making Owen better for that, so that's good. I just think, you know, there's so much exciting stuff going on, and it's a brilliant time to be a programmer. So,
awesome.
Yeah.
Let's end there. Thank you.